Okay, I am here in Reno with, and I'm going to ask you to pronounce your last name for me, because I want to make sure I'm saying it right.
Schwamm.
Fred Schwamm.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and we're here in Reno, and the date is November 13th, 2013. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you first, Fred, if I have your permission to record this interview with you today.
That is fine.
Okay, great. So I want to go back, and we're going to be talking about Martin Ironworks today and your experience with the family business and what you remember about other places on 4th Street, too. But I wanted to go back first and ask how long ago your family arrived in Nevada?
1936.
Okay. And who was that who arrived here?
It would be my mother and... Well, it turned out later on in life that I found out it was my adopted father, but my mother ran off with Betty's father, or I should say, but anyway, not Betty, and came to Reno, okay, and I always thought it was my dad, but found out he adopted me, here in Reno.
Oh.
So we had made, back in 1936, we were the 10 most wanted.
So what had happened?
My birth father was looking for us.
Oh.
And he finally realized where we were, and then but I never met him until I was in junior high school.
Where did he live? Where was your mother coming from?
Syracuse, New York.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I was born.
All right. You were born in Syracuse.
Uh-huh.
And what year were you born?
1931.
Okay, so you were quite young.
5 years old.
Yeah. Arriving here. Uh-huh. Do you remember anything about that journey?
Not really, it's really didn't. We have those old cars, well, you see how old they were in that picture there, and some of them are older than that yet, Because Dad started that business in 39. So.
Martin Ironworks.
Martin Ironworks. Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, did your mother arrive here with your stepfather, or did they meet here?
No, they skipped Syracuse together. They just took off.
And, okay. And tell me their names.
Martin Schwamm Doris Schwamm. That's
okay.
Betty's mother. Okay, and my mother.
And so did they get married in Reno?
Yeah.
Okay.
The one that married him, I'm trying to think. He was a judge here in town. I can't remember his name. But I had known him real well.
Really?
Years ago, yeah. Because we're in some of the same groups together.
And, oh, okay.
And the judge played football, I think, for Cal, University of California.
We could probably find that out. We could figure out who that is.
Beamer, Judge Beamer, that's what it was.
Okay. Wow. So had her family lived in New York for a long time? Is that where they were from?
They came over in the 20s. I don't know the exact date, but they immigrated over.
Where did they come from? What was her heritage?
Danzig, Germany at that time. Now it's called Gdansk, Poland, but it was Danzig, Germany back in then.
What was her maiden name?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. You might want to ask my sister.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah. Okay, and then...
Sileski, but don't ask me how you spell it, though. It's either S-K-I or S-K-Y, and still don't know. Sileski was her last name. Their father, or my grandfather, came over first, and he was working, and they were German, but they were still from Gdansk, which was could have been a mixture of Polish and German and everything else. But they always called him, I don't want to say it on there, G.D., Polak, okay. Okay. So he got mad and he changed his last name to Bremer. And my uncle also changed his name at the same time. When they came over, he changed his name to Bremer. And so then my grandmother, when they came over, her name was Bremer then too. But the three sisters, our mother and her two sisters, kept the name Sileski, because they were going to get married anyway, so their name would change. So,
at least everyone changed their name to the same name.
Right.
Or it would have been very confusing. And then your stepfather, Martin, then where was he born?
Frankfurt, Germany.
He was, okay.
Yeah, and he had, we had two half-sisters. Okay, he had two daughters, and one of them has passed away, and the other one is not too well. You know, she lives over in Sparks or Spanish Springs area with her daughter.
But they had moved here too then, to Reno?
Just the youngest daughter, the one who lives over there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So but they had moved to Reno when Martin Ironworks was where it's at now. See.
A little later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How old were you when you found out he was your stepfather and not
well,
your
I was over my last year in Billinghurst. So what would that make me, about 16, 17, 18? Well, I got out of high school in 49. So I was around 15 or 16 years old. I was sitting on that wall that's still there. And we were doing track. And a fella comes by and asking if there's Fred Schwamm sitting there anywhere. And they all pointed to where I was at, you know. I'd never seen him before, you know. And he says, well, I'm your father. I said, that's the shock I got, you know. I had a hard time getting over that.
Do you know what had led up to that? How he happened to come by that day?
No, he just wanted to see his son. And he had given me a watch. I still have the watch, but it doesn't work anymore. But it's inscribed on the back, you know, I'm father 1945. So
wow.
That's when he had given it. Sent here to him. I think he sent it here to the house, not this house. Because when we were in, when I was in Billinghurst, we lived over on LaRue between Gordon and Nixon back there.
Now we're in a house on Humboldt. Is this a family house?
Yeah, yeah. We moved here when I went to high school. They moved down here right across the street from Billinghurst. That's when Billinghurst was still going on, still over there, you know.
Okay.
So, but Betty was quite young when we moved down here. So.
She's younger than you?
13 years. Yeah.
That much younger, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Where did you go to grade school?
Right up the street here, Mount Rose.
At the historic Mount Rose. Which...
I haven't been back there since I got out. So
that's really...
Yeah.
Well, it's still lovely inside.
Is it?
So you arrived here and probably pretty quickly then went into kindergarten, I guess, at Mount Rose?
No, or? I went to kindergarten and let's see, we weren't living there, but we went to kindergarten over at Southside Elementary School, or that brick building that sits on the corner.
Yes.
Right there. That's where I went to kindergarten.
Inside that building. Okay, we call that the Southside Annex now. Yeah, there was another school, right?
I don't know.
Another Southside school?
No, that's the only one I know of at that time was Southside. And when I got to high school, it became Husky Haven, the same building. Brick building, it's on the corner of Ryland or Liberty.
Yeah, Liberty, right.
Liberty and that other one, the tall.
What was Husky Haven?
Yeah, just a group where you could play ping pong and all stuff like that. You had a place to go after Reno High School.
Oh, okay.
The old Reno High School.
Do you remember being inside there for school, what it was like?
Oh,
as a school?
I don't remember that at all.
It's a long time ago. But then, okay, so then your family...
Then when I went to first grade over here at Mount Rose, and then we had moved over to on LaRue there.
Okay. And then did you go through Mount Rose then for all of the grades?
Uh-huh.
What do you remember about this neighborhood and about that school?
At Mount Rose, I don't remember much about this neighborhood because we were up on the hill.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so you lived in that, yeah. What street were you on?
LaRue, but this one right over here, but further up, though, between Gordon and Nixon.
What do you remember the area around the school being like or what it was like to go to school there?
Well, we had, you know, everybody was pretty much friends. Had friends that lived right across the street. In fact, they were the first people that we met when we came to Reno, Noonswanders, and they lived right on the corner of Taylor, I think it's Taylor, and Arlington. Well, the house is not there anymore. It's just an empty lot that somebody leveled the house and did nothing with the lot. So, but and they were friends, and I see Al once in a while, you know, and Roy, his brother, was in the same class I was. Al was older, and he was always interesting. He was a pitcher in high school. You know, I played baseball in high school, but he was a pitcher.
What was their last name?
Neuenswander.
Oh, I've heard that name.
Yeah. Sure. And their father was the distributor or whatever for Hoover. And they really didn't, he just did it out of his, you know, out of his backyard there, I guess, or the garage back in those days, you know, he didn't know.
Did he go door to door?
That's what he would do, yeah. Uh-huh. The father would do it. Al and I, he was in the Army, I was in the Air Force, and his brother was a naval aviator, okay? And his brother retired from the Navy and is still living in Pensacola, Florida. But anyway, we all met here, and folks had a German party here after the Korean War, you know. And so Al and Roy and I, we all went downtown to the Golden Hotel. And Rosemary Clooney was there playing. And we were sitting in there having a few drinks while she was singing, and she sang a song, and I don't remember which one it was, but she had never recorded it. She sang it down there, and Al comes back, and he was quite a piano player. You would never know it, this guy, but he had an ear for music, and he sat down on that piano right there, but one like it, and picked out that song on the piano. And he was pretty good at that piano. And Roy played. They were taught by Rasishin. I don't know if you ever heard of his name, but Rasishin's son and Al were in the same grade in high school. And the Rasishin now would be, this fellow's son, Rasishin, was a pharmacist over renowned for a long time. I think he left there now, but he lives up there by our oldest daughter, or our daughter now, up on Pleasant View, I think, up there just past the Sparks Family Hospital, or now whatever you want to call that hospital up there, mm-hmm. Northern Nevada Medical Center, just around the corner from that.
So he gave music lessons to kids through town?
Yeah, pardon?
So he gave music lessons?
Yeah, well, the grandfather did mm-hmm. wrestling.
Right.
He was a tough old bird, you know.
did you ever take music lessons?
Well, I did way late in life, and then until my wife came down sick, and then I hadn't touched the piano now for over 2 years. You know,
oh.
And I was taking lessons then. And so she just died last July. So, you know, I took piano lessons. And, well, I ended up with a piano that Betty's daughter had, and it was out here in the garage. And it was a baby grand. Oh boy, was it in bad shape. Piano itself was fine, you know, but everything else, the keys were all dirty and black, and I drug that sucker out, and I got it over to my house. Now I can't get rid of it. It doesn't belong to me.
Oh.
You know? So, but anyway.
How great to play. Well, I'm very sorry about your wife. I didn't realize that was so recent.
Yeah, she passed away last 4th of July of all days, you know.
So tell me what it was like to grow up in Reno as a kid. What kind of things would kids do for fun? Did it feel like a small, safe town?
Well, yeah, you know, you could walk downtown. That's the only way you had when we were small kids. And nobody bothered. The police all knew who we all were, you know. In fact, one of them lived right over here on Taylor Street, right a couple doors down from Noonswanders. You know, I can't even think of his name now. I lose track of names, but anyway, but he lived in Copper there. But they all knew us, you know. When we went to high school, you know, I rode my bicycle until I got my first car, and that was a Model A Ford, you know, and boy, I was living it. Yeah, I paid $200 for that Ford and sold it 2 or 3 years later for $225, and I thought I was making a killing, boy. I made $25, you know.
So what year did you graduate from high school?
49.
So yeah, tell me what high school kids did. You alluded to something you were doing in high school to me before we recorded, but tell me what high school kids did in the 40s.
Well, I was under the arm of a tough German, you know, and I had to learn my trade. You know, I built that one. I was in the thing there. I built that one over there at the old shop. See that?
This beautiful, what do you call that?
It's for fireplace.
Holding logs. Firewood.
Yeah, all hand hammered and everything, you know, and rivet. Yeah, I did that when I was 16 years old, something like that. I made that for Betty later on in life, but I made my mother a coffee table and then also an end table and a candle holder similar to that one there that's sitting on the table.
Uh-huh.
Except it's an 8-sided one, and my daughter has that.
So you were learning the trade starting at what age?
Well, when I was in Billinghurst here, I was catching rivets. When I was 15 years old.
Catching rivets. What does that mean?
Well, at one time, during way back when, everything was riveted. All the steel was riveted.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we did a lot of work around town here, and everything was, you know, connections were all riveted in the shop, and they heat this rivet up about a three-quarter rivet, about yay long, you know, in a furnace down there in the shop, and then they throw it at you, and you have to catch it in this bucket.
Why did they throw them?
That's the only way they could get it to you, is by throwing it. Otherwise, it would cool off too fast if they had to run over there. And
So this was the job of kids, to stand there with a bucket and have rivets thrown
at
you?
That was me. And I had to be careful because, you know, I was way underage for the state, you know. Otherwise, if I got injured or something like that and had to go, the state would have come down on my dad real bad, you know. So.
Well, let's talk about the shop then. So did your dad have, he had the shop for as long as you can remember? Did he start it?
Oh, yeah. He started
it. As soon as he moved here?
1939, he started that building there. Yeah.
Okay, really, and we're talking about the old Martin Ironworks building.
Moral Lab,
On Moral.
Yeah.
Okay. So he started that. And is that the kind of work he had done previously on the East Coast?
Oh, yeah. He learned his trade over in Germany.
So. He did?
Yeah.
Did he ever tell you about that or how he learned
well,
it?
Well, no, you could tell that he knew it in the forging, and I worked on the forge with him, and he'd have me heating up the steel. When I was a kid, I didn't, you know, but then eventually I learned how to do that in the sharpening picks, and they don't do that much anymore. You know, they don't use picks much anymore. They use backhoes, you know, or whatever you want to call it. So
what was the pick used for?
The digging holes and a crowbar, and then you'd learn how to sharpen them and temper them, you know. Temper steel, you know, in the forge, you know.
Well, tell me about that early shop and kind of your early memories of it and who was working there. What were they doing?
Well, we would do a lot of work during the wartime when World War II broke out. My dad, you know, being German, real strong German accents, you know, and he went up to Herlong to get some work. And the purchase season, you know, talking to him and talking to Martin, learning a German accent. You know, back then, boy, people were a little jumpy, you know. And so the purchase agent asked him, he says, oh, how did you get here? And he said, some little old dirt road. And he got in there and was no guards on it. So he says, well, if you leave, you better go back the same way you came, because the guards are at that gate that they might. So he had to go back the same way he came to get here, and we did a lot of those igloos up there for the ammunition storage. We made the screens, hundreds of them, ventilation screens we did, and I used to, you know, put it around out there, and we made bolts. And then we had one time, Dad, when I think it was Dinwiddie Construction was working up there at Herlong, and they called them she bolts, which for forms that, now they got snap ties, but whatever they use now, but back then it was she-bolts.
She-bolts?
They call it a she-bolt. It's got an inside thread and an outside thread, and it's sort of tapered so that when you knock it out. And there he said, well, he saw these things laying there, and he asked him, he said, well, can I take a few of these with me and see what I can do with them? You know, and they were twisted up and bent up and everything else from beating out, you know. And back then you couldn't get nothing. You couldn't buy any more bolts, you know. You had to do it. And so Dad brought him back about half a dozen of them, and he worked on the anvil there and straightened them out. And we had an old lathe, a little lathe from Sears Roebuck he bought. And then he turned them down a little bit to polish them up and things like that. Sent them back to him. A week later, we had three truckloads sitting in the old dumpster, old dump truckloads, the old ones. Not those big ones you see running around now. There's the short beds on them. Lined up, and they dumped them all out in the middle of Morrill Avenue. There were three truckloads of them. Those things, they dumped them right there, and we were busy then. And I learned how to straighten that stuff out, and I worked on the anvil too. So
you worked on those at the time.
Oh,
then.
Yeah, I worked on the forge. I was. Where all the rest of my buddies? They were all going playing sports. You know, I finally got around to playing hardball, baseball at Reno High School, but then I played softball at Mount Rose, and this Betty's got those pictures of me and Don Carano.
So was this a paid job? Were you paid working there when you were growing up?
A couple of bucks a week was about all you were making. That was a lot of money for me.
Well, and
kept me out of trouble anyway.
Were you a pretty good kid?
Pardon me?
Were you a pretty well-behaved kid anyway?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I learned real quick. My dad, they never told us much to anybody, but one time I sort of told him a story, lied to him, you know. And he knew different. And boy, he said, well, you're too big to get spanked. And he let me have it and knocked me clean up there in the room, knocked me clean across the room, and no more. I learned my lesson real quick. Nevertheless, we had a hard-nosed principal up at Mount Rose, you know. She kept us in line too, a lot of, you know, Mamie Tolles and the whole people she had there. She, they named the school after her.
What was her name?
Mamie Tolles.
Oh.
Yep. And, yeah, she'd, if you got caused any problems, you know, all us guys, when we were up there in school and everything, they all turned, we turned out real great because she kept us in line. And if you got in trouble, I had to go see Mamie Tolles. She just said, grab your ankles, and boy, she let you have it with them. And then she'd send a note home to your parents, and then you get it again when you got home.
Yeah, I would imagine you'd learn pretty quickly after that. So, did your dad have other people working for him at that time?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Several? How many do you think?
Well, we had maybe a half a dozen working there. Bill Granada, well, he passed away quite a few years ago, but then he started learning his trade, but then he ended up in the Navy. And then his family moved to Carson City, and so, but anyway, he ended up in the Navy. When he came out of the Navy, he worked there, and he eventually made it up to, became president of the company. But he was, I always liked Bill, because we both came up through the same school. He was older than I am, but he came through the same place.
And he worked with the company for a long time, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what else was around the area there where the original ironworks was? Were there other very active businesses in the
There was one right across the street where Sierra Machinery was across the street. I eventually moved into part of the building there with my own business, and I had my own steel business there, right across the street from where I learned mine, you know. And then the city of Reno built that train trench, and they took my building right out. They moved one of the North Reno route right through my building, and so that made me retire. I thought I'm getting too old then to start all over again, you know. So I retired out. And,
oh, is that when that happened? And what was your business called?
Far West Steel Fabricators.
Okay. Yeah. So when you say across the street, across which street?
Morrill Avenue. Right across the street from that building.
Yeah. So... Oh, that's interesting.
And then Eveleth was next door to us, to the north, and they had that lot there, and then their office building right there. So.
Do you remember that always being a very busy place?
Oh, yeah, as a lumber yard, yeah, because there weren't that many of them around, you know, so they were quite busy there.
And then much earlier, there were other, there were things in the area that aren't there now, like Ben Eckert's Family's Market, and there was a drugstore.
Right, old Ben. Yeah, graduated from Reno High School the same time I did.
Oh, he did?
So, yeah.
And, okay. We interviewed him for this project, too.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You probably know quite a bit there.
Did he grow up working in his parents' market the way you grew up working
probably,
for your dad?
I would say so, but I didn't know Ben back then that much until we got to high school. You know, he was in the same class. But he went to a different junior high, I think. We all pretty much, you know, turned out pretty good. You know, Don Carano was in her class. You know, the Patriots from the El Dorado. You know,
right.
And now he's the one. Now he's selling, he grows wine, you know, winers. So, but anyway.
So did it always seem to you that you would go into that trade?
Not really. When I was over in Billinghurst, my favorite was woodwork. And George Gatta, Senior, he was the instructor. And when we got out of Mount Rose and went over to Billinghurst, we had to take wood shop. Mm-hmm. And they don't have that anymore, you know. So, and first thing in seventh grade, we all got into his room. There were all these benches all throughout the place. He says, "My name is Mr. Gatta, and I eat raw bear meat." You know, man, those kids were just. But he was pretty sharp. He kept us all on. I liked him. He was my favorite teacher in school. And I did a lot of woodwork, and that's turning on the lathe, woodwork on the lathe and stuff like that. And I made a lamp. I don't know whatever happened to the lamp. And then we put all this figure gum wood together, glue it together, and then we had a show, and I made Betty a rocking horse before she was born when I was over there.
Oh, when you were pretty young.
Yeah, pretty young, yeah.
So you always liked working with your hands, though?
Mm-hmm.
You liked building things?
Always did, but now I can't do much anymore. My hands are get that neuropathy. Hands tingling. And when you weighed 240 pounds and you dropped down to 175 in about 6 weeks, I thought that was the end of the world for me.
That happened to you?
Yeah. Weighed 240 pounds.
Wow. What was the reason for dropping all the weight so quickly?
I don't know. Neuropathy. It ended up in my knees. My knees feel like I got a 10-pound weight on each knee, you know.
Oh, wow. So,
and my hands still tingle. But the rest of me is pretty good shape, though.
So how did it happen then? So I did want to ask you, the building then that the business was originally in, was it constructed by your dad or was it there before? Do you know?
No, he had it built, but the structural steel. My dad became friends with Herrick Ironworks in Oakland, California at that time.
What's the name?
Herrick.
Okay.
And they built the trusses and everything for that building.
Oh.
But my dad put it up. And then we did work for Herrick, and they did work up here at Eagle Pitcher down the canyon down there. I don't know if you know where Eagle Pitcher's plant is.
No.
About 15 miles east of Reno on Long I-80 there.
Okay.
And they did work there because there was no places that they could do that. My dad erected it for them, and that's how we got together. In fact, I worked for them. My last summer going into high school, I worked for Herrick Iron. I went down there, but I worked in their office. And I lived at the. They set me up. Gail Herrick was the owner, the president of the company, and he had me set me up at the YMCA, and I got $30 a week working for him down there. But man, it cost me $10 or a little bit at the Y to live there, and so I couldn't afford to ride the bus, so I'd walk to work. It was about 20 blocks. I'd walk through the black section at that time was all in the blacks, and they never bothered me. You know, I just walked through them, and the guy said, "You go, how are you getting home, Fred?" I'm walking home. You're walking home. They knew where I was walking through the whole neighborhood. They never was bothered. You know, and I didn't know much about blacks then. We only had one girl at Reno High School that was African American. You know, and she graduated with us, but that was about it. You know.
What area would you say that was then, that was kind of the black part of town?
Well, the shop was at 18th and Campbell, and the Y was on Broadway, so I'm not too familiar with that area, but that's the area between the two there.
Yeah.
Probably still is, if it's not all demolished, I don't know.
Yeah. So then you were working, so you're working in the shop?
I worked in the shop for a long time, you know. And then,
did they ever add on to the building that you remember? Or did it
This building here, Sierra Machinery, when my dad moved out of there and moved over to 4th Street, Sierra Machinery rented this building, and they added a metal building on the back, on the east end of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But is that still there?
The metal part? Okay. Yeah. They left the building there. But we used to work out there, and not in the metal building. That building, that portion of the building, I'd never worked in because it was afterwards. But we used to do a lot of our work out in the backyard there, and that's when we used to walk over to the Reno Brewery there and see Gus. He was the beer man. He was the beer fellow, and I guess you'd call him beer master or beer meister or whatever you want to call him. Gus, can we have a shot of beer? And all of us were over there because we'd work up a sweat outside there. Okay, guys, we'd grab a little cup, and he'd take it right out of the vat there for us, and we'd have a sip, and we'd go back to work. Do that now, you get fired, you know?
So was that in the building that's still there now, the whole bottling
No.
plant, or the other
the,
one?
The older? Building that's still there from Sierra Machinery, that's what you're talking about?
Oh, no, I mean the brewery building.
Brewery, okay, the one on the corner was their warehouse.
Right.
And the brewery was next door. Now, you ought to talk to Ray Adore. Because his family was involved with the brewery.
Oh, were they? Okay.
Yeah.
Ray Dorr?
Yeah.
How do you spell, is it just D-O-O-R?
D-O-H-R, I think.
Okay.
I think he's still in Reno here.
So when you would go to get your little sips, was that in the main brewery building?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's for Gus and us. And he'd give us a little cup of beer, and that's fine, and go back to work. Sweat it off real quick, you know.
So would you take a lunch and just eat lunch there, or would you eat in the area somewhere?
Mostly I ate over at, it's not there anymore, they tore the building down. I think it was called the Riviera Hotel. It was on the corner, can't even think of the street now. It was right on 4th in the corner. And it had a restaurant in the back. But back in those days, the guys that worked, the older guys that worked in the shop, they'd go to, they'd drink their lunch and then they'd go back to work, you know. But not me. I would, you know, I'd go on a bar back then. You know? But a lot of the guys that worked there were iron workers, you know, in the shop. They worked in the shop, and then they went out in the field and put it up because there was nothing else for them to do, you know, so that's how they would do it. And that's in the old building there.
And there were a lot of places along 4th that were hotels and restaurants.
Yeah,
and bars.
And back then. And we had, at one time, before they built the El Rancho Motel there, I don't know what they call it now, I haven't been down there for quite a while, but anyway. There used to be a rendering, not sure about rendering.
Nevada Packing, I think.
Nevada,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they used to bring their bones next to this building over on the rail siding. And on an open train, an open gondola or whatever you want to call it. And they just dump them there. And boy, after a while, that place would smell.
They would dump them there just for junk?
Well, no, just so they haul them away by the rail car. You know?
Oh, so yeah. They would just be waiting there for...
Yeah, not an enclosure. Oh, God, we used to get smell. And all of a sudden, we'd be getting rats in this building, you know, and they'd be running over the top of the office. And we had a Frenchman working for us. He said, oh, I know how to get rid of those rats, he said. And he built traps up on over the office of this old building there, and he'd get them suckers.
So would a lot of different companies come down Morrill to access the railroad and put things on the cars there on Morrill Street?
Yeah, they would put it there. On, there was a siding there. There was a wooden, what would you call it? Like a wooden dock, really, a pretty good size one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They'd park those rail cars right there, and then they'd drive up there and they'd dump them inside the rail car, you know.
Did the train come pretty frequently?
Well, just the cars, not too often. It'd take them a while to fill them cars up, you know. They'd get maybe a couple of those, two or three of those cars.
Oh, I see. So they'd fill them up and have them stay there
so
until...
Then they rot, you know. And they,
So you weren't very unhappy when they closed.
No, when they... Well, they finally, my dad got after them. He just can't stand it anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But,
now, what was the reason for moving into the new property? Now, was that property already there, the building where Martin Iron Works is now?
Well, part of it was. It used to be an A-frame type building. What it was Wagner tank encasing during World War II. And they brought the building in from someplace and put it up there. Okay.
And which part of the building are you talking about? The really large...
The one that's on 4th Street, not the one that's
right.
Used to be the lumber yard back in there, not that one.
But I know there's a brick building, and then there's the large building where the whole setup is, right?
Yeah, the main building that faces north and south.
Okay.
They had later on, Piero, who owns it now, bought that other building where the lumber yard, there used to be a lumber company there, and they bought that building.
So it was a tank?
Wagner tank. They made oil tanks for the war service. And a lot of these guys that worked for us afterwards worked there because they were too old for the service. So they worked there. And then when that closed down, they came over to work for us. So that building was empty. And what it was is that the ground had sloped from street level to about 4 feet in the back or 5 feet to the toward the tracks, okay? So when my dad got it, they filled that all up because the building was level, but the ground sloped and it was all dirt, you know, and I wouldn't dare venture what's underneath this, in that dirt there now, you know. Everything could have been working in there, you know, but then he had it paved out and then sort of leveled the floor off and made it decent enough to work on. But that was quite interesting one time. After my dad had bought the building, and he got it from the bank, or the bank offered it, I think, for $80,000, and he was wondering how to pay for that, you know. But eventually it was worth it, you know. And one time when I was at the university, the university was they threw a party in there. You know, they just, you know, a big beer bus back in there. God, I go down there. What the heck? And I knew some of these guys, but I, you know. And what are you doing here? Dad owns this building in here. They had a big party going. All these gals were in there. Having one big go for it. You know, eventually they left, and my dad finally removed everything over. You know. But,
did they clean up after them?
Well, if not, they got all buried under the, in the dirt, you know, all that fill in there. But anyway, then we had that fire. I can't remember what year that was, anyway. It burned the whole roof off.
In the new building?
In the building there. No, that building really? They're in right now.
Right.
It used to look like this, and now it's
more. Oh. Okay, so it was an A-frame, and that
yeah, and so the whole roof burned off, and oh man, that was the worst thing in the world that could have happened to us because we had a bunch of work. And it was in I was on February, but I don't remember the year anymore. But anyway, we had the Golden Hotel, and we had a unit out of, we had the first unit out of Tracy for the Tracy Power Plant. There was another job. We had three jobs, and then we were shut down for 2 weeks, you know. Fortunately, the one crane we had over it still worked, you know. But once we got the power hook back up there, but well, we were open air there for a long time until the following winter before we got it all closed in. It was a rough go.
Now, did he want to move over to the current building business was going so well and they needed more room? Or what was the reason?
Well, you know, he was, you know, there weren't that many steel companies here. It was Reno Ironworks and Martin Ironworks were the only two. And then H&N Steel came along, or it was Macaulay Ironworks. But Tom Macaulay, the father, he was all right. My dad had worked for him when he first came here for Tom Macaulay, you know. But then that was the only ones there. Nothing large enough to handle the projects, really, that were going on here. And to keep this other steel companies out, that's the only way you could do this, move up. You know.
Because it seems like the capacity would have increased a great deal in the new building.
Oh, yeah. You know, you need the bigger you get, the more you got to have, you know. So. Mm-hmm.
Did a lot more people start working there, too?
Oh, in the new building. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had quite a few more there.
So tell me what happened after you graduated from high school, and then what did you do?
Then I just kicked around a little bit. I still worked for my dad, you know, and then I eventually went to school down in L.A. I went to business college down there.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Why did you choose L.A.?
Yeah, sort of was a Woodbury Business College, you know, and figured I didn't have enough time for anything. But anyway, no, I had a couple of years in the service during the Korean War.
Immediately after high school?
Well, pretty much so. About a couple of years after high school. But, you know, I kicked around a little bit. Mm-hmm.
But, and then you decided to come back to Reno after L.A.? Was that always the plan?
No, I stayed down there. See, I had a big argument with my dad. And that's when he and my mother got divorced. And we weren't getting along too well. But I was working down there. After I got out of school down there, I went to work for a steel company down there. It made metal buildings. And I spent about 5 years, well, not working for them, but about three or four years with them, you know. But anyway, Bill Granata came down one time and wanted me to come back up. And he asked me to come back up. You know, my dad never asked me to come back to Reno. But Bill did. And we were always good friends, Bill and I. Went through the same school, you know, learned the same trade the same way. And so I came back up and made amends with the old man. So.
And then worked for him?
I worked I didn't work in a shop then, but I worked in the office then, under estimating.
So what kind of work did you do in the office?
In the estimating end of it.
Estimating,
Take it off.
Mm-hmm. So can you kind of explain to me in the current building and the setup sort of what happened and what part of the building or what the operation was like?
Well, when you face the building from 4th Street, the brick front or the masonry front was the office part of the shop, in other words. And our office was upstairs, you know, We had a detailing office. Well, the detailers had the upper windows for a while. And then eventually, you know, they switched things around, and that became the accounting office. And my office was in the back of the back, further back, you know, but a little bit more quiet, you know.
What kind of detailing work was that? What did
well,
they
when you take get a job, and it's not forbidden, you have the structural steel showing on it. When you take the little component out of there, and you draw it so somebody else can make it, and you give all dimensions and everything, and then you hope that it's going to all fit when you put it together, you know. So
were the people who did that, did they have an engineering background, kind of, or drafting?
More drafting than anything. We had a fellow up there, he was John Pope, and he was a good draftsman. And he was in the Merchant Marine during the war, but anyway, he came out of the, I think of that little town on the other side of Fernley. His dad was worked for the railroad there, but anyway, he was a good driver. He had a good mind for mathematics, but he was half Seminole and half white, okay? The Seminoles were out of Florida, and he was married, and his wife was a full old Blackfoot. And she was a very nice lady, and he was good with drafting, but he always tried to draft the stuff that was really easy, and all the cinema stuff, and then all the garbage he did on 8.5 by 11 sheets, but he was good, though. He was one of the better ones, you know, he was fast. But anyway, when time came for him to retire or leave, his two kids, he had a boy and a daughter, and they both joined the Army. And he had a home up on the Callahan Ranch area out there that he built himself. And he put the foundation in with rocks, and we got out of the ditch up there, whatever that creek that is up there. And he built a house himself, and then he decided he wanted to sell it. And he was sort of a character, and but he was good. Like I say, he was good at it, and he decided he was going to go to L.A. and take his wife down there with him. And, was L.A. or San Diego, one of the two. Anyway, he went and built a sailboat down there, and he sailed that sucker to Hawaii with a sextant, they call it, and that's, you know, taking the shots from the sun or whatever it is, you know. No communication, he would tell me. And they sailed that baby to Hawaii over there and sold it. And he'd come back again and he'd build another one. And as he was building these things, he became more of a hippie looking type guy, you know. And he had silver gray hair anyway. And then he got built another one, and he sailed that one down to Panama and sold that one there. Then he come back up, and he was getting really strangely, but his mind was still there, and he'd come in and visit us all the time. So then one time, I'm looking at the San Francisco Examiner, and it said they followed these three boats, power boats, from Mexico on up here, off the Bay Area, okay? Well, about 10 miles out, they transferred, they were hauling marijuana. And one boat was empty. And it says it was named John Pope. I wonder if that's the same John Pope that we knew. Sure enough. When they pulled into Vallejo there, they arrested them all. But fortunately, the boat that he was on, where his wife was on, she didn't know this was going on. You know, she didn't know they were hauling marijuana. And the rest of them all, and boy, she got mad. And she divorced. And she had 300 acres up in the Dakotas for the Blackfoot. And she said, that's it. And she went back there. Well, like I say, she was a real nice lady. She couldn't take the heck that, you know. And so then we had to write letters. And the dad wrote letters to whoever had to write them to sort of take it for his character reference and stuff like that. And we'd always put him back. Well, if he has to need a job, we'd put him back on. But he came here, and his daughter had gotten out of the service by then. So she became his responsibility, you know. And then, Eventually, he went to Hawaii. We never saw him anymore. So it was sort of character, though.
Yeah. That's quite a story.
It had 5 tons of marijuana in them two boats. A lot of marijuana back then.
So I almost hesitate to ask about anybody else who worked there, but was he the most colorful?
No, they were all pretty good. They're all good guys.
Yeah.
I had some good guys working there.
And before you had been working there, because you obviously then had had business experience and training, had someone else been doing the accounting and that kind of work before you came back to do it?
They had a lady there, Chris Schnitter, and she did all the, she was the bookkeeper back then in those days. You know, she was pretty sharp. She was a hard-nosed gal. She was a tall, slender gal, about as tall as you are. You know? But she was good at the books, and she took care of them. You know?
And then did your dad continue to be really hands-on? I mean, was he working in the shop?
He did once in a while, you know. But his main was, getting the work. You know, that was the main thing. And so when we pretty much moved over to the other building, he pretty much left it up to Bill Granada back in those days, you know. And so I worked in the shop for a long time, you know, and before I went to L.A., you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see the railings next door in that little apartment house that our sister and I owned. Next door here.
Uh-huh.
I made all those myself. But I made those when the contractor, who was a friend of mine at that time, he passed away now. But anyway, I said, well, Gene, I said, you got to make it by the dimensions because I'm building the rails now. And that was when he was digging the footings. You normally you wait till they measure them, you know, and the people measure. I said, well, Gene, you got to follow dimensions. And I kept that.
Did you make things in the shop?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked a long time in the shop there. Yeah.
But did you make things just sort of personal projects too, or did you?
Well, I did all the rails from my own house when I got married, and we had to live over on Daniel Webster, right off of Plum. And I did all the railings on the face of the wall. Okay, I have a masonry wall that was I bought a house that was already built from people, and they had a masonry wall. I ran the full. Well, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that little park. Daniel Webster. There's just a little small park there. Well, it's right across the street from that. And I hand-forged all these scrolls. And if you ever go look at it, that's all hand-forged. Over 100 of them, 150 of them, something like that.
Where is that park?
Right on Daniel Webster Drive, right off of Plum, West Plum.
Okay.
Right where they're starting that construction. Have you ever run into that construction? Mm-hmm. Daniel Webster starts right there, and it goes down on the third house off the corner. I'm still living there.
You are? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how did it happen that you did the work for the park?
Didn't do it for the park. The park was across the street.
Oh, the park was there, and it's your house that has all the work on
yeah,
it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's all painted white. You can't, it needs a paint job. I'm going to have that redone next summer.
Now, tell me, you just mentioned getting married, how you met your wife and when you got married.
Well, the shop foreman of Martin Ironworks introduced me to him because he was living right down the street from her. And I married a woman that had four daughters.
Oh.
And we had one of our own, and then the oldest daughter, did herself in. It was too bad. I don't know. She was married, had two children, but a real nice guy. He was with the power company here for a long time. Then he went to the PG&E down in Fremont and worked there till he retired. And she got on something wrong and ended up committing suicide. You know, but that's way it goes sometimes, you know. But,
sorry.
Well, we still have four daughters. And we got one that's married to George, that has a renal forklift store. Just another one that's retired with her husband, lives in Arkansas. And the other daughter is an RN at Renown. Her husband is a building contractor, houses and stuff like that, remodeling. And he's a good one, too.
And what was your wife's name when you met her?
Betty.
Wait, what year did you get married?
Pardon me?
What year did you get married?
We were married for 45 years. So, I think I took it out of my... I had to carry it in my wallet. We got married the day before Mother's Day, but they keep changing that date, and I could never remember.
That's true. It doesn't make it easy.
I'm trying to think. It was like the 60s.
Mm. And then did you live in that house right away? Did you move
to
that house?
Yeah, we picked it up right away. You know, uh-huh. When I got married, I had a few bucks in my pocket. You know, I barnstormed around, but I got tired of that pretty fast. You know. And then managed to have a few books.
So how long did you work for Martin Ironworks then?
Until 1978, then I left. That's when the whole downtown went wild, you know, with buildings and everything and casinos. And I left, and I've never been downtown since.
Really?
At night. I've never gone back. I had to go and had my own business once in a while for business during the daytime, but I never went downtown. In fact, I still haven't.
And why did you leave the business then? Was it because you were starting your own business?
Or? Well, I got another argument with my dad. Well, my dad had been already died, you know. And I had a problem with one of the members of the board. Mm-hmm. And I was married to my half-sister, you know, all things, you know. He became a real problem, and everybody thought I was nuts for what he was doing, you know. And so I had the whole board against me. Well, Bill Granata, after I started I went to work for Reno Iron after that.
Oh.
And I didn't want to mention any names, but anyway. And then when I had my own business, they were doing Wells Avenue. And Bill had to come by my place of business to get home. So he'd stop by occasionally and we'd talk for couple hours at night, you know, I didn't get home at 8 o'clock at night, you know, we'd be talking with Bill. And then he come by one time and he says, well, Fred, he says, they had a problem with the same person, you know. Okay, but the problem when I had it was only about $5,000. When he had it, it'd come up to about, you know, six figures. I said, Bill, you're lucky if you find it, you know. I had nothing, I left the water over the dam, you know. He says, well, the attorney says, you know, Fred was right. And they were all wrong. You're too late. I said, no. It's the way it goes sometimes, you know. And police was all I got here. You know, I had mine for about 18 and a half years, my own business. So, till the city come along.
At least it was gratifying to hear that eventually.
Yeah. Like I said, we were pretty close friends.
Uh huh. Where did you locate your business?
Right across the street from this one.
Oh, across the street from the original building there on Morrill.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right, okay.
The building is still there, the part of it is. Uh-huh. You know, the office part is still there. In fact, the fellow that started with me, he took the other half that Reno Fork used to be in half the building, and I was in the other half, but my shop was separate, you know.
A separate building, but on separate, the same property?
Yeah.
Same, okay.
Yeah. But that's the one that the city ran the North Reno route through it.
Okay.
They moved it about 100 feet north. It went right smack through the building. Well, I'm too old to get started all over again. I was about 72 years old then. I'm not.
So did they offer you money to buy the property? That's how it happened?
First time they didn't offer quite enough. So my daughter, who's pretty sharp, Pat, she and George got this other attorney involved. I can't think of his name, but he was the only one. He wrote, I think, two letters or three letters or something like that. He got us a few bucks more, quite a bit more, because he got 40% of the thing.
Okay. So that was your retirement offer then.
Yeah,
right?
Really. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. So then, what kind of work did you do out of your shop there?
Same type.
Primarily.
Thing. Structural steel.
For a lot of commercial buildings, largely.
Yeah. It's not the real large one. One of the largest ones we did is one that's across the street from the old Porsche building.
Mm-hmm.
On Liberty Street, there's that three-story, four-story building there. And we did that one. And that was about the largest I ever got into. You know.
Did you go back to working with your hands?
No, I did all the forge work.
You did?
Yeah, until we shut her down. I did. At that time, in the old shop, we had a coal forge, okay?
Can you explain what that is?
It's run by coal.
Okay.
Coal and air. And then we converted that, and we got that over to the original place, or in fact, I think they still got the forge over there. And the EPA back then started the. And when you run up a coal forge, you can smell that coal all over. I mean, it just hangs. It doesn't just go up in the air. It just hangs. And you can smell it, you know. And he come into our place, or I don't know who it was, but anyway, the EPA says, if we catch you again using that forge, it's a $500 fine. If we catch you the second time, it's a $1,000 fine. And if he catches you the third time, it's a $10,000 fine. And that's when we shut the forge down and went into gas, you know. And I had a gas forge. I bought it. They had an auction at the new Reno High School because they closed all that stuff, all that industrial arts classes down. And they auctioned it off, and I got the forge for, I think it was $350.
Oh.
And I worked with it. But I never did like a gas forge. It never quite got the steel hot enough. Coal forge, you can get it white hot, but a gas forge, you can leave it in there all day long, and it never burned the steel up, you know. But it was enough to do, you know.
I was going to ask.
I made that table one weekend on a, I think it was on a 4th of July weekend for my sister, this one here.
Mm-hmm.
She bought the glass top, but I made the table for her. She had it painted.
It's beautiful.
And I made that little candle holder for her.
Well, I was going to ask why you would continue to use a coal forge if it was against the law or against regulations,
well,
it was just because it worked better?
You know, when I came up from, well, yeah, you get better heat. I mean, it's... I'm surprised I don't have lung cancer from breathing that stuff all the time, you know. But back in those days, you never gave it a thought, you know. So I don't think I got lung cancer. I'm still alive. So I enjoyed working more on the coal forge. In fact, when in my business, I had brought a coal forge with me from L.A. I bought one for $50. Down there, and I had it. When I moved up, I had a Mercury, two-door Mercury, and I had that forge in there and all my stuff. And I left LA in the early morning hours, you know, and I got out of their ways and I went and had breakfast on the way up, you know, when it was daylight. And the old highway patrol looked me over and made sure I could see out the back window, you know, out of the mirror. I had all my stuff in that one little that Mercury. You know?
So it's small enough to fit in the back seat of a car, a Forge?
The one I had. In fact, I got it in my yard right now. I use it just as a ornament, you know.
And would the ironworks have several of those or only one at a time?
They had, no, you would only usually just
You'd
have
only
one.
Need one.
My dad got the one Forge that was in the building right now. He got that out of Virginia City. With all the tools when a blacksmith shop up there someplace.
So that technology didn't change for a long time.
No, it still doesn't really. You know, and the coal forge, and so when I started my business, and I wanted to, the guy asked the guy, because I was going to put a coal forge in there, but I called the people up where we used to buy our coal from. He said, well, Freddy says, if you want to buy a rail car full of coal, I'll get it for you, but otherwise forget it. Because the EPA, back then the EPA just came down on everybody, especially with coal, because you just, you know, unless you want to build a $100,000 thing to clean the air, clean it, you know, you just couldn't do it. Yeah.
Did the coal just come from a local supplier somewhere?
Well, the supplier was out of, I think he was down in Stockton, and that's where we used to.
So would the coal arrive on the train?
No, we would get it in bag loads, okay, and we'd buy maybe 10 or 15 bags at a time, 100-pound bags. It's quite a bit of coal, you know, but still it goes pretty fast when you're working on the forge all the time.
Would they just come on a truck then?
Yeah, they'd ship it up on a truck for us.
Okay.
Yeah, it was fun working then, back in those days. We had a lot of fun. In fact, they burnt my hand here when I was still pretty young, you know, and I had a glove on working on the coal forge in the old shop, that one there. And a coal went in there and burned a hole in my hand. And before I could stick my hand in the water, which was right next to where you're working, I had a hole burned in there about a quarter inch around right down to the bone. And I never did go to a doctor. My hand swelled up, and I'd stick it in Epsom salts, but I didn't dare go to a doctor. They'd get after my, the state, you know, they'd want to get it on NIC, and yeah. And so,
because you were too young at that point?
Yeah, working in the shop. See, I could work there so long as I didn't work with any of the machinery or nothing, you know, and just... They could sweep the floor and stuff like that, but that's all I could do. But if they found out I was doing it, they were really going after my dad. That would ruin my career, you know.
So what did they do when that burned? What did you do immediately? Did they just, you just wrapped it up and went home?
Yeah, well, no, I didn't go home. It just, it was like a round coal. And for years, you could feel the hole right there, but it's closed over now. But it happened so fast, you just don't know it.
So you'd be working on the forge, and there's always a big pot of water?
A big barrel. a wood barrel of water you had right there, you know, always right next to it, because you had to use it for tempering and stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed working on the forge. You know, a lot of fun. Well, see what I did there.
Now, are those still skills that people use today, or has it just changed considerably with
equipment? Well, I think most of it's changed to gas now, mostly gas forges, because you just can't get the coal anymore, you know.
But do they still have to do the same kind of work, even though it's a different kind of forge?
No. The gas forge, it depends. Right now you can buy most all that stuff. You know, there's outfits that, I don't know where they get it from, but I got a catalog at home, but that's thick, and you can just buy everything now and just put it together, you know.
Can I ask you a little bit more about other places along 4th Street?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You were talking about when all the growth happened, when everything started building in the late 70s,
uh-huh.
And that's about when the interstate went in too, which would have changed 4th Street a lot,
yeah.
Yeah, so can you talk about, especially before that time, some of the places where you would go and just describe some of those places?
Well, the I-80 ran through most of the residential areas, the old Reno up there. And I remember they had the state had a house for sale right there, because, you know, they'd buy up more property than what they need, and then what they don't need, they sell, okay. And there was a house there, they wanted $45,000 for it, and I tried to get one daughter to buy, not my youngest one, but another one, and they didn't want to buy it. It was a real neat old house, and it's still sitting up there. And every time you go down the freeway, you can see that house sitting there, and it was right there on, I think, Evans Ave in the freeway right there. And
right above 6th? Like, yeah, just right up there by
the freeway? It was the old, they called it the Billinghurst House. Now, that's not the same one as the Billinghurst School over here. It was a different Billinghurst, I think. And the old doors, the light switches were all push-button. Black and white, you know. And it had you could walk in this house, and on the right side was like a living room. On the left side was like a big dining room, or a library, whatever you call it. And then it had the stairway going up, you know, a circular stair. Wouldn't stare going, oh, sort of a neat old place. I thought, man, if I needed a house, I would have bought it. You know? Can I? Excuse me a minute, I gotta go to the restroom.
Of course, yes.